This We Love Telling podcast is a Mirror Digital production. Hello, I'm Rob Lee, and this is the We Love Telly podcast. Thank you for joining us, and among other bits that we've got lined up for you this week, we have champion TV scoffer Adam Richman, and then we've also got Tony Stewart, who's going to be reacting to comments Sam Womack's been making just before her departure from EastEnders. We've also got Chris Wilson on Luther, and We Love Telly's Sarah Wallace and Jennifer Roger are chatting about The Apprentice and Dirty Sexy Things, among other things. So, have a listen, yeah? On the line now is the chairman of Chomping, the mayor of Mastication, the Tsar of Chewing, its competitive scoffer, Adam Richman. Hello, Adam.
How are you? That's the best introduction ever. I want to go, like, take on a heavyweight bout now.
I'm honored. Are you hungry right now?
Actually, I'm doing pretty good. I had a little tiny bite prior to this interview, and I'm good to go.
Jolly good. So, Man vs. Food Carnivore Chronicles began last night on Good Food, which is Sky 249 or Virgin 260, weeknights at 9 p.m. How frequently do female fans try to seduce you by making puns about meat, Adam?
You know, not nearly enough. Not nearly enough. We finished season one in Minneapolis when I tried to eat a meter-long bratwurst. And the myriad quotes about, that's a lot of sausage, I don't think I could handle that much meat, that's a lot of meat to put in your mouth, and so on.
Yeah.
A, deeply titillating. Second of all, the inability to make the that's what she said jokes really almost made my eyeballs bleed. And it culminated because my producer was like, Adam, don't do it, don't do it. And finally, at the very end, this really deeply beautiful brunette, I said, do you think you could take on a meter bratwurst? And she goes, ooh, I don't know if I could handle a sausage that big. That is a lot of meat to take in. And I was borderline apoplectic, and I was like, but that is what she said.
That's amazing. Well, you've got the thoughts and wishes of men around the world just being in that position too, that someone will say that to you, though, obviously.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Oh, absolutely. I retain the audio bite. I just contextualize it differently later on.
Indeed. So what is an Apocalypse Now burger? Does it come with napalm bacon that you love the smell of in the morning?
Bacon. Sorry, that was my brando.
It's very good.
I saw snail crawl along the straight razor. No, the thing about the Apocalypse Now burger is that, so arguably the preeminent culinary educational institution in the United States is the CIA, the Culinary Institute of America,
gotcha,
in Hyde Park, New York. And the owner, the chef there, is a graduate there, and what he does is he makes his patties with four different cuts of meat.
Mm-hmm.
So the meat itself has incredible, incredible explosive flavor. Onto that, he has a couple different cheeses, a bit of seared foie gras, which is the first time that we ever had that. I never thought we'd ever get a chance to show that on MVF. And then, truly, the crowning achievement and the single element that I thought would be detrimental to the burger, which I was deeply incorrect about, he makes a macerated cherry spread, and it's the perfect counterpoint to the richness of the foie and the beef and the,
oh, wow,
the pork, because he puts pork belly in the burgers. So it's this deeply rich flavor. But I think it could be considered an apocalypse if one were to engage in eating it on more than a once-a-year basis.
Yeah, I think it'd probably gout, maybe.
Maybe. I definitely think that it's definitely the type of burger that makes you want to say, stay in the boat. Like, you definitely needn't go that far. This is the end, my only friend.
And what other meaty treats do you have in store during the series?
Everything from, you know, dry-rubbed brisket that's been smoked over pecan shells and live oak in the hill country of Texas to, there is a slow-roasted pork in Minneapolis at maybe my favorite restaurant in America, a place called Brasa Premium Rotisserie.
Mm-hmm.
And in my humble opinion, this pork should have a sign that says not to be used as a marital aid. It is something that is so special and works as a leftover, works as a main dish. It's maybe the best meat restaurant I found in the country.
And we see this happen during the series, do we?
Absolutely.
Smashing. So back in the Man versus Food days, perhaps the most notable colossal snack to defeat you were some fire-in-the-hole hot wings from Sarasota, Florida. Well, I say some, of course.
I barely got through that one, and in fact, it stands out as the only spicy challenge I've ever lost. And the truth is, the owner sabotaged me, and his microphone was on, and I didn't hear it because I don't have a walkie in my ear. But after making the wings, when I went out to the challenge and I'm whooping the crowd up and everything like that, he actually said, let's add more. And the thing he was talking about was pure ghost chili extract, which was not only stupid because the restaurants where I win do better business, mm-hmm. but it's profoundly dangerous. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, the food at that place is not that great to begin with. So then if you're going to then make it even worse and more unpalatable, you ultimately result in a worse challenge and a worse dish.
You're really not fans of these people at all, are you?
You know what? He meant well, but he did wrong.
So you've withstood all these extremely spicy challenges. Has there been any interest from scientists to investigate the lining of your colon or anything like that? Or are your guts made of steel?
I am flesh and blood. You know what I want to say? You know, I'm half man, half amazing, like anyone else. But no interest in taking my colon for science. You know, you can have my colon when you pry it from my cold dead hands. But I think. Which begs the question, what are my hands doing there in the first place? But I think, my doctors and I, you know, have laid out a plan before I even took my first challenge, just in terms of how to establish checks and balances, the mm-hmm. fact that I need to look at an hour of exercise the same way I would look at a pill, and as an essential, as a true essential, in terms of what I need.
Do you think it's this element of, you know, kind of not flying in the face of health and safety, but pushing that body to extremes that makes it so popular around the world? It makes it, you know, so testosterone-fueled as well, I suppose.
You know, I think the nature of competition inherently appeals to the testosterone set, but mm-hmm. I think that also, quite simply, this is the one means of competition in which we all can engage. If I took the field, you know, against Man U, I'd be, and I played soccer for 7 years, or football for 7 years.
What position did you play?
I played central defensive midfield, and I would play wing attack.
Well, Matt Letizia was pretty fat at Southampton. You could have, anyway, that's by the by. But yes,
wait, did you just call me fat?
No, I didn't call you fat. I said
fat. The thing is, I love the game, and. But again, it's quite simply when there is an elite class mm-hmm. that there is simply not there's a level upon which I cannot engage, and the even competitive eating circuit I simply couldn't do that. But these things are at a restaurant where John Q. Public can go with his family, with his friends, and while we all can't play like Rooney or play like Berbatov or you know whatever or you know, play like Nadal or something like that. At the end of the day, we all can eat. And if push comes to shove, we can all eat a lot. And I think that's kind of what my job is with the show, is to create this kind of mythic scope around these amazing restaurants and around these amazing dishes and around these competitions. Because then when you do it, there is this moment of glory, of defeat, of conquer, mm-hmm. of powering through an obstacle. And I think it's deeply appealing. And I think, quite honestly, the foods that we showcase are absolutely delicious.
Adam, you've just made me feel like an athlete. That's wonderful.
That's what I'm here for.
So you're over in the UK for a little while. Are there any mealy must-haves on your list while you're here?
While I'm here, I'd like to try, a proper steak and kidney pudding, I think. I haven't had my full English yet, which really distresses me.
Gosh.
Honestly, because I wake up and I work out and, you know, it's kind of go, 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 go. So hopefully at some point I will be able to indulge in a full English. And I want to have, I lived in Ireland for a bit after school and I went to Beshoff's in Dublin and had their fish and chips. But this is London. And I'd love to really go to, is it Whitechapel?
Yes, Whitechapel.
And I heard that there are places that do, like my dad, may rest in peace, he had come here with my mother because my great-grandpa was from Leeds.
Okay.
And he came and they went through and they found this great chipper that still serves it in the newspaper. And that's something that's really special to me. And, you know, do the mushy peas and really embrace it. But I want a great curry. I want a real Balti.
You need to go to the Midlands for that, but that's.
Do
that's
I really?
Like, yeah, yeah. Wolverhampton and Birmingham—that's where the best curries are.
Oh, I definitely, I definitely will check it out, and I also definitely would love to come back. I mean, I've been speaking with the wonderful people over at Good Food, and I have to say they are great. I'm really very proud that they are my family here in the UK, and I hope that remains the case for perpetuity. And I would love to come back and go up to Cornwall, have a proper pasty, and go to Liverpool, have a good scouse, and then have a good Balti in the Midlands. And even though Wolverhampton continually, at the worst time, kicks my ass in FIFA 2011.
Really?
Yeah, no matter who I play with, invariably, I always give up a game to Sunderland. I always, and Osamoah Gyan is a great player. I'm the first one to admit it.
Yeah, I think he's
but
going soon.
Sunderland, Wolverhampton blew out my season when I play with the Hotspurs. And
hi, this is Rob. I'm doing a voiceover right now because Adam and I had quite an extensive discussion about football. While very interesting to us, it may not be that interesting to you. So if you want to listen to it, head to mirrorfootball.co.uk. Joining us now to discuss, Luther is editor of new London-based culture website, societyperrier.com, Chris Wilson. Hello, Chris.
Hello, how's it going?
All right, thank you. Now, according to viewing figures, Luther has been anything but Van Dross, excuse me, but you hold that this is the most ridiculous crime show in recent TV history, don't you?
Well, it is. It's a wonderful show, but it's ridiculous, and it gets more and more ridiculous every week. From the script to the plots, it's just pure nonsense, but sort of compelling viewing at the same time.
What particular is grinding your gears about? Well, not grinding your gears, but winding you up about it.
Well, let's just look at the plot. It's like the Bill on LSD. It's ridiculous. You've got guys running around with water pistols full of hydrochloric acid spraying people in the eyes.
Well, that's very dangerous, surely. What's
well,
ridiculous
exactly
about that?
I mean, I travel through Liverpool Street Station most days, and in this week's episode, it all went off in Liverpool Street Station. I've never seen that. I've never seen anything quite as ridiculous as people smashing in the roofs of cars with hammers to sort of prove a point about the cult they're a member of. But aside from that, the script is... It's not like The Wire, where it's, you know, cleverly written and, you know, every word is sort of pondered over. It's, you know, there's lines like, he's not a dirty copper, he's a man over a barrel. And it's spoken by everyone in these sort of ridiculous sort of Mockney accents. It's like Damon Albarn sounds like Ray Winston compared to some of these guys. It's ridiculous.
Oh, God, that's horrendous. But, you know, he is very flash, but his motor's not that flash, is it?
Well, he drives a Volvo, sort of mid-80s Volvo, one of those big old things, you know. You see him with the lights permanently on, one of those cars. Even Wallander didn't drive a Volvo, and he's Swedish. So I'm not sure what kind of statement Idris is trying to make. And while we're talking about Idris Elba himself, he's the main man, of course.
Yeah.
He's like the Terminator without any good lines. He's, you know, he's sort of hunchback, moves around, wears this big jacket, doesn't seem to sleep, gets nails hammered through his hands and, you know, guns at his head every 2 minutes, but he just carries on and on, like, sort of... this sort of half-man, half-machine creation.
But unlike most TV coppers with a, you know, a conflicted soul, he doesn't even get the job done, does he? He took somebody to his safe house, which was his own flat.
Yeah, and what a flat. I mean, this is a guy who's heading up a sort of leading crime unit in the Metropolitan Police. You'd imagine they'd pay him a decent salary. He's in some sort of squalid flat, high-rise flat, paper peeling off the walls. And like you say, that's not the place that you take someone who you're trying to hide from criminals who have got you over a barrel.
Well, I think, Chris, you're just being a little bit bourgeois, criticising the man's flat, his interior decoration, and the man's car. What should he be driving?
Luther, I think maybe sort of a Range Rover. Not a new one, maybe sort of from the 90s, a bit boxy, but, you know, that's sort of more his character, okay. Off-road.
Are you after a job on Top Gear by any chance?
I think I would be taking over from Richard Hammond because he's sort of more my character if I was to go on Top Gear, yeah.
Well, you are more right-wing than Jeremy Clarkson though, aren't you, Chris? So this has been entirely ridiculous, this four-parter. Hopefully it'll be coming back for another series. Where do you think they can go with it next time?
Well, I'd like to see him take it out of London. I mean, London looks great in it. It makes London look like the flashiest city in the world. Everything's shot really well. But it'd be good to see them, I don't know, take it to the north of England, perhaps, or even onto the continent, you know. I'd definitely stick with the Volvo if he's going abroad, because, you know, those cars go forever and
ever. Very reliable, very reliable. Now, just to make sure, you are actually a fan of Luther, aren't you?
Oh, I love it. I think it's brilliant. I think it's well acted, despite the dodgy accents. And I think, you know... It is overwritten and overcomplicated, but compelling viewing nonetheless. And I'll certainly be tuning in this Tuesday at 9 p.m. to see the final episode, see how they wrap it up.
No, that's very well wrapped up as well yourself. Thank you for your comprehensive review, Chris, editor of new London-based culture website, societyperrier.com.
Thank you.
Joining us now to talk things telly, surprisingly, are Jennifer Roger and Sarah Wallace from We Love Telly. Hello, Jenny.
Hi, Rob.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello.
So, Dirty Sexy Things. That's what you said to me, Sarah, when I had to report you to HR. But it was also on E4 at 10 o'clock last night. Was it any good?
It's very good. It's been described as like The Only Way is Essex, but with better cheekbones.
Who described it like that?
A rival newspaper.
Well, come up with your own quotes.
Okay, it's like Made in Chelsea, The Only Way is Essex, Every other godforsaken reality show that you've ever seen in the last few months.
That's good, that'll work.
But
that'll work.
Yes. With a bit more nudity.
Oh, really? There was nudity? I missed nudity.
There was naked models running around London in the opening scenes.
Okay.
Which I think you've got to be pleased about.
Well, let's not make any kind of general kind of broad strokes about models, but are they, you know, a little
fit.
Bit thick? No,
oh,
thick, I was
oh,
going.
Oh, fit.
No,
thick.
I presume they'd be fit, but are they a bit thick?
They haven't yet proved themselves to be the brightest tools in the box.
So, Sarah.
Yes.
Peru, this chap Peru, is he the kind of... tell us about Peru.
He's the star of the show. I mean, there are eight models and airhead models, very beautiful. But Peru is the star. He describes his images as iconic. You know, he thinks he's an icon and he just lords it around saying, I photograph the rich and the beautiful and the famous... And the shoot that he does in the first episode, he calls Fur Coats, No Knickers shoot.
Classy.
Yeah, he is a class act.
Are they wearing fur coats and no knickers? Is it that kind of shit?
That's the implication.
Oh, right, okay. So is this, was it amusing? Am I going to enjoy this? Is this the kind of empty-headed rubbish that's going to replace my post-weekend, Monday night, Made in Chelsea viewing?
Rob, I know that you are a fan of The Only Way is Essex and Made in Chelsea. This is right up your street. Right. It's the same. It starts off...
low-rent reality shows.
It starts off by saying, you know, some of these scenes are set up, which is the nature of quite a few shows at the moment. And then it goes on to say, this is the real modelling world. So there's a bit of a contradiction there. It's a set-up, real world.
But is this Peru chap and are the other cast members as, self-knowingly twatty?
Yeah.
As they tend to be? Or is it a bit like Pineapple Studios, or is this genuine?
They're hamming it up for the cameras. They know that that's what sells. So they are self-consciously, you know, they're aware of how they're behaving. But it's not quite as camp as Pineapple Studios was.
They take themselves quite seriously, don't they?
More seriously.
I mean,
so,
Peru
yeah.
is a serious photographer.
Iconic, don't you know?
Iconic.
Yeah. Darling.
And is it a good accompaniment with Britain and Ireland's Next Top Model, which I believe started last night as well?
Well, that is much more serious. It's about finding good talent, proper talent, going around the streets, getting proper models and...
Yeah, whatever. Okay, so moving on to The Apprentice. We're getting closer to the end now, and we're getting pretty close.
I know. Helen has won 9 in a row. I know. Is she going to make it to the end? Queen's Sleep.
I couldn't tell you.
They have to sell stupid items like nodding dogs and duvet sets and things like that this week.
So what are they doing? They're going back to Lord Sugar's beginnings, aren't they? Selling wholesale tat.
It's another opportunity for him to remind us of his roots. Mm-hmm. So they go off to a warehouse in Enfield where he, you know, that's where the boy done good.
Okay. He's got a bit in for Tom at the moment, hasn't he? I mean, he says... You've got through this in the last 10... I won't do that, it's just... by the skin of your teeth. Enough with the innovator, designer and all this stuff. You're now in the thick of it, all right? Hang on. I thought we were in The Apprentice, not the thick of it.
He sends him off to do some selling, and he does a pretty good job, but, yeah, Lord Sugar doesn't like him very much, I don't think.
But he does a good job this time.
He does, but there's a bit of a row because having sold Nodding Dogs very well on the South Bank, Melody then reinvests all his hard-earned cash and buys a load of crap.
Okay. And sounds like Jim is a little bit back in favour. Nick says about him, I'll say this much for Jim. He's not a shy boy. I've never seen such an abundance of baloney. He's a good fun, people like him, and I quite like him now for the first time.
Superman is back. We all loved him in the beginning.
Do we all love him again now?
We love him again now.
We loved him, then we hated him.
We hated him, but now we love him again.
Is that the memo that we love him again?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So that that little discussion about The Apprentice came with spoilers, so sorry about that. Next, Casualty. We haven't spoken about Casualty for quite a long time, and they had a special little guest star this week, didn't they, Jenny?
They had the fabulous Denise Welsh. Popped into Casualty at the weekend, played glamorous trucker.
A what?
A glamorous trucker, and that's no rhyming slang, Rob.
It didn't sound like rhyming slang then, it just sounded like you were just pure out abusive.
Well, we caught up with her to get the gossip about Casualty, and also those recent photographs of her holidaying with her Dancing on Ice partner, Matt Evers.
And hang on, what was she doing in Casualty?
She played a mother who is contacted because her son is in hospital, who she hasn't seen for 10 years, because he was involved in a paedophile relationship with a young friend of the family.
Okay.
So she cut off all contact, and it's about whether they can find a future as mother and son. It's quite a controversial storyline.
Quite heavy for Denise Welch, I'd suggest.
It's not her usual...
No. She did manage to go through the entire episode without flashing a bra, didn't she?
Yes, absolutely. And you're
a rare
right.
moment of gold on TV. She didn't manage to do that.
It's a rare moment, and we are used to her flashing her flesh. In fact, she recently looked absolutely fabulous in a swimming costume.
Tell us about her and Matt Evers.
She told me there's no romance. Mm-hmm. And in fact, Matt is good friends with her husband, Tim, who recently stormed the stage on Dancing on Ice to defend her honour so romantically. And her son, Louis, and that's why they went on holiday together. She also revealed to me why she looks so fabulous at 53, and she puts it all down to ice skating. And she says that she's loving life, work, can't wait to get back on Loose Women, which she says works because it's just a bunch of older women sharing their
dirty laundry. Gobbing off.
Exactly.
Like harridans. Brilliant. So that's the little bit of extra special gossip. Thank you very much, Jenny. Thank you very much, Sarah.
Thank you. Thanks, Bob.
And here we are again, and the answer to the question is, why take two bottles into the shower when you can have one soap expert, namely Tony Stewart? Hello, Tony.
Hello, Rob.
Now, Tony, there's one big talking point in soaps this week, and that's the departure of Sam Womack from EastEnders. You're not very happy about this, are you?
I'm not very happy about her going, but I'm not very happy about the way she's going either, and the kind of, like, all the quotes that are coming out of her mouth, allegedly, about, you know, what an ordeal she's had playing this part and how shocking it's been, etc., etc., and I have been tempted to shout out, oh, just get on with it. You're an actress, for Christ's sake. What do you expect?
Well, she has been very outspoken, hasn't she? She's saying she's been physically and emotionally shattered. And she's also said that I needed to stop and find some peace, a bit like Ronnie.
Hmm. What can you say to stuff like that? I mean, I won't undermine what soaps do. They're fantastic, and I'm bound to say that because I'm the columnist on The Mirror for them. But the thing is that, you know, they are soaps. It's not real life. You know, actresses of a certain calibre should be able to go on set, do the part, and come away from it. Of course there's going to be an emotional impact, and this story has been a particularly emotional one to do. She lost a baby at New Year. She kidnapped or sort of abducted Kat's baby, and it's gone on for quite a few months. She's been secretly grieving for her lost child, and it's been a real, as they say, a real journey, an emotional roller coaster. But, you know, at the same time, she should just acknowledge that it's made her probably one of the biggest stars on British TV. And I think she's doing EastEnders and herself a disservice, to be honest.
Well, what she said is because, although apart from the side she's been saying about it, been crying and screaming at work every day for 6 days a week over 2 years has been very draining for her. I'll just throw another quote at you, that she's talking about the way that television works. And what she said in Hello Magazine was, unfortunately, because of the way television is going, and by that I don't just mean just soap but reality and also drama, there is a massive consumer need for controversy and high risk storylines. We may not like it, but the viewing figures go through the roof. So her being outspoken like this, is it a lack of loyalty to the show that you're it's concerning you?
Well, it's not so much a lack of loyalty to the show, though. I do think that she could leave the show with a bit more dignity, particularly what they've invested in her and how they've stood by her. It's not so much that, it's just that, you know, if she thinks that the viewing figures are going through the roof, she should have been around when Dirty Den and Angie were clocking up 20-odd million, you know, as a matter of course. And in fact, all the soaps used to have massive viewing figures. An event in Soapland was something like in excess of 20 million. I think probably EastEnders' highest figure, and it wasn't the Ronnie story either, was something like 16, 17 million. And I don't think the baby snatch story has achieved those heights. So what she's saying is not strictly true. Relatively now, sure. But, you know, that soaps are popular. That's why EastEnders and Corrie vie it out between each other, week in, week out, their Monday episodes particularly, for the biggest rating of the week.
And I know that you think this is a great soap storyline that's been great for the show and her career.
Well, absolutely. I think, let's not forget, Sam Womack was a sort of appalling Eurovision song entry in 1991. She was
you remember it well then, obviously.
Yeah, well, we did a bit of research on this recently for a bit of a spoof article that we did. And also she was in some dreadful sitcom called Babes in the Woods. And EastEnders actually proved that Sam Womack can act, and she's a very good actor. And I think she should turn to Deirdre Santa, who is a producer who took her on, and to Brian Kirk, who is a producer who's taken this story forward, and just say a massive big thank you instead of whining and moaning her head off about it. And let's not forget that the Mitchell sisters have been one of the biggest double acts in soap ever.
Since the Mitchell brothers.
Well, since the Mitchell brothers. You know, the pitch to Deirdre originally was, I've got a great idea, said somebody at a meeting. Three words, the Mitchell sisters. His answer, let's do it.
So, by being so outspoken on her way out, has she closed the door on a possible return in the future, do you think?
No, I don't think so, because I mean, I'm not going to give away what happens in Thursday's hour-long episode. Let's just say it is one of the best episodes of EastEnders this year. It is fantastic. We see Sam Womack smiling during it, but it's all about the head games between her and Michael Moon, basically, who's the real father of baby Tommy. And he's a bit of a sicko, a real weirdo. And he's basically trying to bring her down. Meanwhile, Jack, her husband, is trying to get her to run away to Mexico rather than face the court case, which is what Thursday's episode is all about. And of course, they're incredibly moving scenes because Sam Womack does leave this week. And I can't really reveal more than that because it'll just spoil it for viewers.
So you're not going to tell us what leads directly up to the doof, 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 doof?
I can't reveal exactly what leads up to that, except to say it's incredibly emotional and Julia's theme comes out.
Julia's theme? What's Julia's theme, Tony?
Julia's theme is the piece of piano music that gently works its way into the familiar EastEnders song. And all the scriptwriters say that to get the doof-doof moment in an episode of EastEnders is fantastic. To get the Julia's theme moment is so rare that it's the highest accolade a scriptwriter can be paid. Mm-hmm. And it's also the highest accolade that that particular episode can get.
Well, it's obviously going to be a great episode then.
It is.
Pat, hit Julia's theme. Now it's time for my favourite bit of the podcast, and no doubt yours as well. It's the reverse theme tune competition. It's still untitled as competition, but you can probably grasp the crux of what it's all about from my last sentence. So listen to the little piece of theme tune we've got playing. It's in reverse, did you get that? And then if you can tell what it is, tweet us to @WeLoveTelly. Let us know what it is, and you might win some stuff. I'm not going to specify what that stuff is as of yet, but you might win some. So that Twitter address again is @WeLoveTelly. Here we go. Thanks for listening to the We Love Telly podcast. You better be subscribing to us by iTunes now, yeah?